Hello and welcome to the Village Celebration. I'm Vicki Newton. Thank you for joining us. We have a guest with us today who is an award-winning journalist and has recently written a book that shines a light on many of the complexities of racism and discrimination against African-American men in particular, and has written several other books that explore some of the challenges faced by our community. Please join me in welcoming Lewis Dugood, who is a retired columnist for the Kansas City Star. Lewis, how are you?
I'm doing well, Vicki. How about you?
I'm doing well, thank you. Glad you're with us today. Let's start with Our Father's Making Black Men, and it's really a memoir that centers on your dad, who was a university professor at the University of Arkansas at Pine Bluff, and also founded a chemical company in the mid-20th century.
That's correct.
He was incredible.
Dad was larger than life. There's no question about that.
How did you decide to address the issues that black men face through the experience of your dad?
Well, the book starts out in the introduction with a phone call from my mother when I was a bureau chief in one of the suburban offices at the Star, and the phones are ringing and everything is going haywire and on deadline, and yet she calls, and then with her phone call, everything for me went quiet, because what she was saying was that African-American men were being given a raw deal in the media. And part of the reason that was occurring was because of so much that she saw on television and heard on the radio and read in the newspaper was about African-American men just doing terrible things and being underperformers and not doing well on jobs or schools, being criminals and committing all sorts of offensive acts against women and children. And she knew that that wasn't the black men that she grew up with, her father, her uncles, her grandfather, nor her husband, and all of the people that they associated with. And so she was imploring to me to devote what I did as a writer for the newspaper. Then I wrote a column and stories for the Star in addition to editing, to devote more of my time, more of my energy to writing about positive things about African-American men. And this was, like I said, in the mid to late 80s. And so I took what she always took my mother seriously, but I took what she told me and began to write about African-Americans in a way that I knew African-Americans as individuals I grew up with, as individuals I looked up to, as individuals who represented nothing but pride and honor. And so the book was an outgrowth of my mother's cry to do these things, to speak to the real value that African-American men provide to our country. And it's really no different, Vicki, than what Carter G. Woodson was saying at the turn of the last century, that we need to be speaking about our own accomplishments, and we need to highlight the great things that African Americans do, because the stereotypes are constantly out there trying to overwhelm the real image of us.
So you listen to what your mom said, and that became a focus in your work. And some years later, you published Our Father's Making Black Men. You've had a great reception and great response to the book. You've received an award, the 2017 Lewis Lyons Award for Conscience and Integrity for Journalism at Harvard. And it hits home for so many. What is the solution?
Okay. The solution is that African American men first need to understand that we do have value, that we shouldn't be taken by the image of us in the media as individuals who are sagging and dragging and people who are criminal ne'er-do-wells. I mean, when I say the media, I'm talking about radio, television. I'm talking about the negative rap music, not all rap music, but the negative rap music that depicts us as almost less than human. And we need to understand the pride that we should have in ourselves and in each other. One of the things my mother insisted on is that we have to love ourselves unconditionally before we can then begin to love other people in a way that is about real love. And one of the things that both of my parents were giants, but one of the things I got from my dad was that we need to work diligently, consistently, and endlessly as African Americans to really promote a true image of us. Black men have a role to play with black children. We help to shape manhood for our boys, not just our biological sons, but for all young men who are out there. We have a role to play for our girls because we then help them to understand what real men are like. And it's so important. One of the things in Our Fathers Making Black Men, which stands out is the forward and afterward that Betty Tate Beaver wrote, and it speaks to the whole Black Lives Matter movement. And if black lives are to truly matter, then they will matter only when we as African Americans make them matter. We have to step up. We have to take a stand now, or we're going to be in trouble later.
Well, we've certainly heard this, as you mentioned, from Carter G. Woodson, combating the stereotypes, telling the good that's done in our community. And how ironic that your last name is Do Good. Your dad founded Do Good Chemical. Boy, that's quite a challenge, a bit of pressure, last name like Do Good, but you and your dad have lived up to it. Let's talk about his chemical company in St. Louis, Do Good Chemical.
It was a company that he established in 1947, and the book goes into it. Dad was a graduate of West Virginia State College in 1938 in chemistry. He also was an Omega. A lot of people will identify with that. He graduated magna cum laude with a degree in chemistry and in teaching. Teaching because he was told by his professors that as an African American graduating during the Depression in this country, he would never get a job in chemistry. He pursued it nevertheless, going on to Cornell University, which had its own affirmative action program at that time of taking only one African American in a particular subject area, and he just happened to land there at the right time. He received his master's degree in 1939, then was hired sight unseen by the president of AM&N College in Pine Bluff, Arkansas. He went to Arkansas for the position to head the chemistry department there at the college. And when the president of the college saw him, he said, "If I'd known you were so young, I wouldn't have hired you." He was only 21 or 22, but he also was very sharp-tongued himself. And he said, "If I'd known you were paying so little, I wouldn't have come." So they had this tense relationship with each other, but Dad took the job, worked there, but he also picked up a job with the Pine Bluff Arsenal during World War II, and so he was working with all kinds of very dangerous poisonous gases, chemical multiple elements that ended up being used in the war. He went back to Cornell in 1945 to work on his PhD. He received his PhD in 1945, then did 2 years of postdoctorate study at Cornell, and in that 2 years of postdoctorate study, he developed some treatments for malaria, which was important because during World War II, the U.S. in the Pacific was losing more men to malaria than to bullets and bombs. But he also worked on a problem of trying to develop an agent that would help make plastics plastics. And so he solved that, and he developed a plasticizing agent that became the thing that's used in plastics even today. But the frustration that he got, and he carried it until he died in January of 2015, was that he never got credit for his work. He said to the day he died, all he got was a pat on the back and a handshake. And so in 1947, he left Cornell and, with his family's help, established Do Good Chemical Laboratories and Manufacturers in St. Louis. One of his brothers, who was a Howard University graduate Howard Law School, had gone to St. Louis. And the family was really, it represented what was going on in many families throughout the country during the Great Migration. People leaving the South to escape oppression and racism and discrimination and violence, and going to cities in the North trying to find their American dream. And so Dad did that, but when he got to St. Louis and wanted to buy this large animal hospital that he knew he could convert into his chemical company, he found that racial covenants prevented the property from being sold to African Americans. So he and his family, to get around the racial covenants, pooled their money and bought the thing with cash. It was about $6,000 in money in 1947, which amounts to over $300,000 today. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the book is a story of African Americans overcoming, but it's also a story of family and the family knowing at the time that college was the only way out for African Americans. Dad's father worked as a brakeman for the Norfolk and Western Railroad, and he saw then that the worst and most dangerous and dirty jobs went to African Americans, and he didn't want any of his children to follow him onto that line of work. And so he insisted that they all finish high school, and they did, and nine kids total. And then he insisted and provided the funds for them to be able to go to college, which was unheard of, again, during the Great Depression, and certainly for African Americans. And yet he knew that that was the only way that they would succeed. And Dad was just one of several of the Duguid children who went on the path that their father wanted them to. But then when Dad got to St. Louis, established his own chemical company, and this is really at the core of the book, his was the first black business on that block. His family helped him retrofit the large animal hospital into a laboratory manufacturing area. But then once everything was established, he began to pull kids off the street, give them jobs, teach them an unshakable work ethic, get them to see the value of their education in school, and then help them into colleges and careers. Dad he ran his company full time, but he also worked full time as the head of the chemistry chemistry and physical science department at Stowe Teachers College. Then, because of segregation, African Americans went to Stowe. When the 54 Supreme Court decision occurred, ending legal segregation, then those faculty members who were retained were moved to Harris. Stowe closed, as happened to a lot of black schools. And Dad became the head of the chemistry and physical science department at Harris Teachers College. Then it was attached to the St. Louis School District. And so in addition to teaching full-time, he ran his company full-time and, again, pulled kids off the street to be involved in the work of manufacturing, shipping, receiving, inventory, and sales of the products that his company produced. He wanted to be the owner of the intellectual capital that Do Good Chemical was able to develop, and he was, which is very different from having to work for someone than have all of your intellectual property taken because it doesn't belong to you.
Which perhaps he had, you know, recalled from his work on plastics,
right,
and vowed not to allow
that
to happen again.
Sure.
You hear this fierce commitment to community and also the strong family. Are those two factors you think we're missing these days?
Oh, without a doubt. And the other piece, and I neglected to mention, Vicki, is that once Dad's business was established in the 1200 block of South Jefferson Avenue, then other black businesses began to locate there as well. The block had a tailor, a dry cleaners, an auto mechanic, a Baptist church. It had a shoeshine parlor and a grocery store. Mm-hmm. And so these people were supported by the community, but then they also, as black businessmen, supported each other. And so there was this whole community effort, and then the other businessmen took it upon themselves to also pull people off the street and give them jobs and help them to understand that there was this community that they needed to represent. And yes, we are seeing time after time after time the fabric of our community being frayed. It's segregation was not a good thing, don't get me wrong. I'm mm-hmm. not a proponent for going back to segregation. Mm-hmm. But what segregation did was it forced people to live in an area, again, tightly bound, so that they had to establish a sense of community in order to be able to survive. That's how African Americans made it. But then when integration occurred and those with the means left, then they took really a lot of the glue that kept the community whole away. The black businesses were unable to make it because they lost their customer base and in many cases had a difficult time, if not impossible time, competing with the white community and so many other businesses. And there was, at that time, an effort made by people on the block, women in particular, to look out for everybody's kids. I mean, there were many instances in which if a kid did something before that kid got home, his family knew and he was in trouble. And I want to also stress that in addition to writing about Do Good Chemical, I grew up there. And Dad and Mom's idea of when my siblings and I should go to work was when we could hold our bladders, our bowels, and a broom. So from age 3 forward, I was working at the company, sweeping the floor, emptying the trash, and so were my siblings. And so we all grew up with this unshakable work ethic, and we all grew up knowing that college was in our future, and not going was not an option.
You've written a book about education as well, A Teacher's Cry, Expose the Truth About Education Today, and then most recently, along the same lines of education, a report was published about the success of students at HBCUs, and it's a bit dismal. Can you share your thoughts on this report that talks about the very low graduation rates at HBCUs and how you think that will impact our community going forward?
Right. I thought a lot about that report because part of what it's saying is that our kids going to historically black colleges and universities are not being prepared in grade school, middle school, high school for college. And so the HBCUs are being tagged with a low graduation rate, but there needs to be more preparation. That is a symptom of there not being enough prep done at the lower grades to get kids ready for college. Community colleges also have an incredibly low graduation rate. Why? For the same reason. And they also accept pretty much anyone who comes to their door. That's what a community college is about. So I think that, in essence, we need to double down as a community and make sure our schools are giving our kids the education that they need to be able to succeed once they get to college. College is no place to goof around and play. It has to be a place of structure and commitment to be able to perform in business and industry. Otherwise, we're graduating people with deficient skills, and then as a community, we will have deficient outcomes because people aren't really doing the work that they need to do. Part of the theme in A Teacher's Cry is that we need to make sure that the education that our kids receive at the earlier grades is second to none, so that they then go to high school, find that high school is doable, then go to college, and they're not overwhelmed by what they encounter in college.
Louis Dugood, award-winning journalist and author of Our Fathers, Making Black Men. I've enjoyed talking with you and hope you'll come back and share more of your thoughts with us about community especially and what we as a community can do to strengthen our bonds for future generations.
It's been a pleasure, Vicki, and thank you for having me.
You're listening to The Village Celebration.